Case number 21-1726, UST Holdings, Inc. versus United States. Mr. Leibowitz.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act conditionally delegates executive branch authority to regulate international commerce, a power reserved by the Constitution to Congress. First, the delegation is to the Secretary of Commerce to make a finding whether or not imports are threatened to impair national security. The second delegation, if that finding is affirmative, is to the President to take action should he decide it is feasible and appropriate to do so. The first question is whether that commerce finding is final agency action subject to judicial review. Plaintiffs are firmly of the view that it must be, because the commerce finding confers authority on the President that he didn't have in the first place. He has no authority to regulate imports under 232 without that finding. In addition, the President has many conditions in the statute, some of which he abided by, I would say most of them, but some that he didn't abide by. The key issue is, first of all, judicial review. Without the—
What timing requirements are you contending weren't complied with? That wasn't clear to me.
The timing requirements, Your Honor, were complied with respect to the formation of the initial relief. And what we're talking about in this case is not modification after the relief is—
Now, just tell me which timing requirements you contend weren't complied with.
The timing requirements were complied with. There are three important ones. 270.
Oh, no, I don't need to know what they are. There's no issue about whether they were complied with.
There's no issue as to whether they were complied with. The question is whether the determination of the President complied with the statute and whether the commerce determination is subject to judicial review or precluded from judicial review because it's not final agency action. We contend strongly that it is final agency action. So the time limits in this particular case were complied with. And in fact, the President beat the clock by a wide margin in making his determination.
So how can we, whether you consider it to be review of the agency action or of the presidential action, how can we make a determination as to whether this is a threat or not? I mean, that would seem to be the sort of standard that the courts really can't make a determination about, particularly where it's presidential action. And the Bush case in the Supreme Court sort of says in these circumstances, you sort of mush together the agency's determination and the presidential determination since they're directed toward the same standard.
We can do it in a very meticulous way. The Commerce Department's job, delegated by Congress, is to determine whether imports threaten to impair the national security. The statute says threaten. It doesn't say maybe. It doesn't say perhaps. It doesn't say conjecturally. The word threat has meaning, and that would be part of the review of the commerce determination. The statute does not require the President to make an independent determination of threat, only to concur or not to concur with the Commerce Secretary's finding. Let's presume for a moment that the Commerce Secretary's finding is devoid of evidentiary support, is illogical, is arbitrary, and the executive branch is contending that nevertheless, the Commerce determination, which provides new authority to the President that he didn't have before, is precluded from judicial review. We think that is an outrageous assertion.
Okay, so maybe if the agency said we're not going to make a threat determination, and the President nonetheless acted, that might be a problem. But what's the problem with the threat determination that was made here? What? What's the theory as to how it's unsupported?
Again, let's suppose that it is completely unsupported. We haven't had review of it yet. We need to have review of that determination.
Just tell me what the theory is. If, as, and when you got such review, what's the matter with the threat determination?
The scenarios that were articulated by the Commerce Department do not amount to a threat based on the ordinary meaning of the word threat.
Because?
They are neither reasonably likely to occur nor likely to occur in the near future, and that is a fundamental feature of the definition of threat as opposed to perhaps or maybe.
I don't see how we can review that kind of amorphous determination.
It has to be reviewed because it provides authority. It changes the legal landscape and gives the president the power to act where he didn't have it before. So it is a final action of the agency, and it is and any feature of the Commerce Report could be determined to be without evidentiary support. It's required to look at the report, to look at the finding, and see whether it is supported or whether it's arbitrary. I believe in this instance myself that it is arbitrary, but that's not the point here. The point here is that it needs to be reviewed, because without a valid, logical, and a non-arbitrary finding, the president doesn't have the authority to adjust imports. That's what Congress provided.
Okay, what about the durational issue?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
What about the durational issue?
The statute very clearly requires when the president makes a determination, he must state the nature and duration of the action that's required to solve the problem of imports.
No, so your theory is he has to have a fixed duration, 3 years or something like that.
We do not contend it has to be a fixed duration or a set date, but it could be circumstantial. If capacity utilization is at a certain level for a certain period of time, I certainly think he has the discretion to say, after a certain period of time, much like Section 201, he can review the process, have another investigation by the Commerce Department. We're not saying there has to be an arbitrary deadline.
Mr. Leibowitz,
yes.
Didn't we address this issue in Trans-Pacific, at least in some manner, where we observed that the president's proclamation 9705 expressing an interest in protecting national security rested on this important goal of trying to reach an 80% production capacity for domestic steel production? And so in that sense, your initial response to Judge Dyke's question about can't duration also include something like circumstances as opposed to a hard time limit seems to be already reflected in the president's initial proclamation here.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, perhaps in rebuttal, I'll get into this a little bit more. Trans-Pacific does not deal with the issue of creation of the remedy. It deals with modification of it. In Trans-Pacific, the tariffs were imposed on Turkey. They were doubled, and the issue was whether that doubling was appropriate. That's after the remedy goes into effect. These are issues related to the creation of the remedy in the first place. The determination, which starts the clock running on the 15 days, is the key here. And that determination must state the duration. It didn't. The president didn't do that. And that is the issue that we face today. Um, I want to get back to the judicial review because the court below failed to appreciate the similarities between Section 201 in the Chorus Group case and the situation we have here. In fact, the president in a Section 201 case does not have to take action. And as we pointed out in our reply brief, a third of the 201 cases that went to the president, he took no action. He's obviously got the authority to do that. That's just like 232. The wording is slightly different, but not materially different, such that one obtains judicial review and the other does not. They both obtain it, or neither one does, but Chorus Group made it clear that Section 201 is subject to judicial review. Some form of it, the details of that review, the extent of it, need to be dealt with, I think, on remand in the first instance. But there is clearly an entitlement to judicial review. There's a strong presumption. When the president is given additional power by an agency, that agency report is subject to review. We cited the cases. I don't need to repeat them now. But that is our main point. Judicial review is essential to avoid arbitrary exercise of power that Congress did not delegate.
You want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Your Honor, I would like to do that, yes.
Okay. Thank you. We'll hear from Mr. O next.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'll address the APA review issue first. That is whether the Secretary's advisory report to the President is a final agency action reviewable under the APA.
Well, I mean, it has to be reviewable in some circumstances, right? Suppose Commerce said, we don't think it's necessary for us to make a threat determination at all, so we're not going to do that.
I think that was
presidential action.
You're correct. You're correct. Yeah. So under Maple Leaf Fish Co. and Silfab Solar, that would be reviewable for the content of whether the statutory prescriptions were complied with, because Subpart B of the statute does require a finding of threat by the Secretary in order for the President to act under Subpart C of the statute. But that would be review under cases like Silfab Solar or Maple Leaf Fish Co. But it wouldn't be going into the merits of the President's fact-finding or even the Secretary's fact-finding or the merits of those determinations themselves.
As to the threat determination.
As to things like the threat, whether the duration is satisfactory to someone else, things like that would all be out of bounds under that case law. Correct. But we think that line of authority is not EPA review in the sense of whether something is arbitrary or capricious or contrary to law. It's review under Maple Leaf Fish Co. standards of whether there's a clear misconstruction of governing statute, significant procedural violation, or other action outside delegated authority, which is a different sort of review. That's our position in this case. So, but leaving that aside, I mean, we can talk about the cases which we believe were in our favor. We think the trial court addressed the issue properly, declined APA review. I do want to go into the merits arguments that the plaintiff raises, because those
Mr.
do
o,
deal with.
Mr. O,
oh, yes, Your Honor.
Is it theoretically possible that a secretary report could be so skeletal and conclusory as to why there's something threatening national security, that would be something that we would have to consider as possibly exceeding the president's statutory authority?
That's a good question, Judge Chen. I'll put it this way. The way I read the statute is under subpart, when you get to subpart B and subpart C, the import of the persuasiveness of the secretary's report is that you're trying to convince the president. So if the report is skeletal and it doesn't have, you know, some kind of rational basis supporting the threat finding, the risk is that the president just won't act because he won't agree with it. So in that sense, the statute builds in this sort of check that doesn't really make itself necessary for
I guess
kind of
my question is premised on the president concurring with this skeletal three-sentence report. Then what happens?
Our position would be that would be unreviewable under the statute, because here you do have an affirmative threat finding The president, for whatever reason, did concur with that threat finding. And one thing that I think is important here is nothing in subpart C restricts the president to just look at the secretary's report. So let's say the Steele report just has 3 sentences. It was conclusory. But that doesn't mean the president didn't talk to other advisors, didn't talk to people in the domestic industry, get other advice and consent that did compel him to act ultimately through a presidential proclamation. So we think there is a distinction there. And I understand kind of the tension here about saying something is out of bounds in judicial review, but we still think that position squares with the case law, which has always been very deferential to the president enacting in this particular sphere. So moving beyond that procedural issue,
help me a little bit. I mean, in a normal anti-dumping case, as I understand it, once you have a commerce determination, ITC determination of material injury, you still have to have presidential approval right before the anti-dumping order takes effect. And yet we routinely review commerce determinations about dumping origin. I mean, how is that different, I guess is the question.
I think the big difference here is how the statute is structured. I think the two cases this court would have to square are this court's en banc decision in Motion Systems and Chorus Group. And what the trial court did when analyzing and harmonizing those cases is it did it under this kind of level of discretion analysis. How much discretion does the president have to, you know, disagree with the finding, to reject the finding, to say, no, I'm not going to take that action? And temporally, who is the one who takes that last action? So there's an interplay between these factors, which is consistent with how cases like Dalton versus Specter and Franklin versus Massachusetts have analyzed the issue. They view the issue temporally, and they've addressed the issue through how much discretion does the president have when he ultimately decides not to take a certain action. So here, when we're looking at Section 232,
well, in a normal anti-dumping case, can't the president just say, I don't believe that the dumping duties are in the national interest, so I'm not going to do anything?
I don't have the specific, to me, I would look at the statute. I don't have that specific statute in front of me, so I don't know how the presidential action or discretion is circumscribed. But here, with respect to Section 232, the president's action is essentially uncircumscribed. There's almost no limit other than certain factors he has to consider as to whether he should or should not take action that limit what kind of action he can take, what things he should find persuasive or compelling. And so the level of discretion that is afforded the president in this particular case, we think demonstrates that it is the president that takes the final action. It is he who ultimately makes the decision from which legal consequences flow under the APA, which makes the advisory action, the underlying action and recommendation unreviewable in the APA. Moving on to the merits portion regarding challenges to whether the president's finding a threat or whether the issue of the nature and duration of the president's actions are reviewable, we think that these are square merits challenges that the plaintiff is raising, which, you know, cases, SOFAP Solar, and Maple Leaf Fishco have said are not reviewable in this court. The court doesn't have jurisdiction to review those discretionary actions. So we think in one sense, Judge Baker's concurrence below has a significant amount of sway. What Judge Baker recognized is, for example, the plaintiff isn't challenging that a duration wasn't stated. The plaintiff recognized essentially that a duration was stated because there were circumstances here that specified what the duration was. Essentially, you're just disagreeing with what that duration should be. You're disagreeing with the persuasiveness of the threat finding. And what Judge Baker said is if that's the case, then we don't have jurisdiction over the issue. Now, we didn't raise the jurisdictional argument, but I think this shows or demonstrates how closely plaintiff's argument is tied to this kind of merits second guessing, which courts have already said are not reviewable under this court's case law. So we think that established precedent decides the issue squarely in our favor, and that this court, precisely on that issue, should affirm the decision of the trial court. The last issue is the The timing issue with respect to the negotiation provision of the Section 232 statute?
I don't understand that we raise any timing issue.
He did say that, or my friend on the other side did say that during his opening statement. His brief would suggest that he's challenging the negotiation provision as to the timing provision from that statute. So if he waived it now, then I'm happy to not address it and avoid the issue altogether.
Anything further?
Nothing further, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. O. Okay, Mr. Leibowitz, we have a few minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I feel like I'm reading a different statute than my friend on the executive branch side. There are numerous limitations on the presidential freedom of action. One is that he must solve the problem. In his judgment, he must solve the problem of imports. He has to eliminate it. And that is a key to why the duration must be part of it. Duration puts a finite limit. You can't tell whether you solve the problem unless you have some limit to the action. Trade remedy statutes in general provide for periodic review, provide for termination. Just to be clear, Your Honor, the Chorus Group case did not deal with anti-dumping, which has numerous specific statutory provisions regarding judicial review. 1516A, for example, of 28 U.S.C. Section 201 is different. Section 201 parallels Section 232 in many respects. The president is free. The court below was wrong to say the president wasn't free to take no action under Section 201. He is free to take no action, and there's a provision in the statute, Section 2253B2, that says that. If there's no action that the president determines is feasible or appropriate in the national economic interest, he can take no action. And in one-third of the cases before him, he did exactly that. So that is very parallel to Section 232. Notwithstanding that, this court held that Section 201, the administrative determination, is judicially reviewable because the president didn't have power in the first place. Before the ITC determination in that case, the president didn't have the power to limit imports. After the determination he did, that was the key. They didn't talk about the idea whether he was free to reject something or accept something. There is no material difference between rejecting a finding or saying, I hear your finding and I'm not going to do anything about it. Those are the two, those differences are not significant. And that is our assertion. Regarding Section C3A, the 180-day provision, there is some relevance because the president's determination excluded, and I'm talking about Proclamation 9705 now, it excluded import relief for Canada and Mexico. He tried to bring it back in the 15 days. Now, in that 15-day period, the statute is crystal clear. The president must implement his determination within 15 days. The determination is 9705, not the belated inclusion of Canada and Mexico in Proclamation 9711, the day before the 15 days. Both sides agree that the 15 days started to run on March the 8th, 2018, with the issuance of 9705, and the 23rd was the...
Wait, now you're confusing me. I thought you said there wasn't any timing issue that you were raising.
Not that the president violated a time limit. No, he didn't violate the time limit. He beat that time limit. He had 90 days, and he used about 60 days before 9705, and he implemented within 15 days thereafter. The question is, what did he implement? He implemented 9705, not 9711. That the statute is very clear on that. His discretion is sharply limited in many, many respects.
Just so I understand, your argument is that the subsequent proclamations after 9705 violated the statutory timing requirements? That's your argument?
My argument is that the 9711, between the time of the determination and the implementation, violated the statute.
Because of the timing?
Because the determination was the determination. That's the president chose to make the determination on March the 8th. That's what he did. We have.
I see. You're saying the president had no ability or discretion to amend his choices made in Proclamation 9705.
Not during the 15-day period. He had to implement that determination.
Yeah. Okay.
Thereafter, that's another issue. That's a separate set of issues after that date. I'm just talking about 9711 now, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. We're out of time. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.